Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, how are you guys doing? Welcome to the Seaman on Sports podcast. NFL free agency, even though it hasn't technically started, still the legaling tampering period, which I never got, is in full swing. The money is crazy right now. You have, you know, Tremaine Johnson getting $72 million. Jarrett McKinnon is a top five paid running back in the NFL. You have Andrew Norwell is the highest paid guard in the league. A lot is going on right now. Kirk Cousins gets $84 million fully guaranteed, the first fully guaranteed second contract in NFL history, or non-rookie contract in NFL history. And that almost seems like kind of tertiary news at this point. Crazy stuff going on right now. NBA, season's wrapping up, a lot of tight races there. And, we have March Madness about to start, and it feels like it's not even at the top of the news cycle right now. You also have spring training going on. A couple signings that have happened lately, including Jake Arrieta and Lance Lynn, Logan Morrison, guys like that. Still have guys like Alex Cobb and Greg Holland out there as well. So we're going to get to all of that. I'm going to be joined by DC Dave, who's going to join me. Have a lot to discuss. Haven't been on in a while. NFL free agency has kind of gone full crazy at the moment. A lot of money being spent right now. I think some winners for me early on. I think the Bears getting Allen Robinson, Trey Burton, Terrell Gabriel, really kind of copying the format the Los Angeles Rams had last year, surrounding talent around Jared Goff with guys like Sammy Watkins and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. I think the Bears are doing a really good job of that. But right now, I'm joined by Dave. Dave, how you doing, man?
Hey, doing real good, Jimmy. How you doing, man? Busy time of year. Couple days here.
I was saying that it's funny, NFL free agency is kind of out of control, and it technically hasn't even started yet. Tampering period where you're not supposed to come to any formal agreements with anyone, but the NFL lets that slide a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And, a lot of trades, too. It's something you don't normally see in the NFL. But
Kind of like, not like tertiary trades, but like big name, Marcus Peters, Alex Smith, Michael Bennett. There's been a lot of big names involved in these deals. So I guess we can get all to that. But I think we have to first start off with, I think we all knew it was going to happen, but Kirk Cousins lands the first fully guaranteed free agent contract ever, a 3-year, $84 million with the Vikings. So $28 million per, just slightly above what Matt Stafford got. And so if you combine what he got in 2 years of the franchise tag, he's basically set to make $130 million. And so he goes to the Vikings, who went to the NFC Championship game last year, and they have a good receiving core with Diggs and Adam Thielen and Kyle Rudolph at tight end, and a really good young defense. What do you think about the move for Cousins in general? Obviously, you have an interest in that. And then what do you think about the move for the Vikings?
Yeah, I think for Cousins, it sounds like he got a little bit less than what they thought. It looked like he was going to get, 91, 92 million guaranteed, 30, hit that 30 million mark. But I don't know what happened there. It came up a few million short. But, yeah, pretty impressive to get it fully guaranteed. Like you said, he's kind of just bouncing off, the 2 years that he had the tag put on him. Just, I think it's the first time, anybody's not only got the fully guaranteed, but back-to-back tag years. I mean, he's cashed in on a lot of money. And for a guy who really hasn't had a lot of success, he's a good quarterback. He's solid. He's, some days you know, it's sort of like a little bit of a roller coaster. You know, he can look so good for a few weeks, and then he seems like take a step back. And you know, when we kind of need him to step up big, the last game of the year, the last 2 years against the Giants, he came up on the short side. Well, you can't always blame the quarterback, but if you watch the games and you just saw how he played, you were just disappointed. Especially when we were paying him, you know, top dollar last year, $25 million on the clip. But for the Vikings, you know, yeah, their opportunity, you know, I agree with them. I think they got out of Case Keenum and what they were going to get out of him. You know, obviously Zimmer didn't feel comfortable, you know, getting another year like that out of Keenum. And I do think, my personal, I think Cousins is definitely a better quarterback than Keenum. I think he'll fit in fine. He's a hard worker, gives you everything he got. What I really like about him, he's very durable. And the Vikings have had troubles with, you know, durable quarterbacks. And, yeah, I think Bridgewater, boy, that's just a tough guy. I mean, I guess they would know better than anybody. If they didn't have confidence that he could come back after 2 years, I don't know why the Jets would. But I could see why you would give him a chance. He looks so good, Bridgewater does.
I think it's a fine flyer for the Jets. I mean, they give him a 1 year deal and they don't have an answer at quarterback. So, I mean, I think he also wanted to go somewhere he thought he could compete, and Minnesota paying Kirk Cousins, you know, the money they paid him, he wasn't going to be able to compete there.
No, he's not going to compete there. And, you know, the Vikings are just, it's just sometimes that way it works together, where they have a lot of young talent that's not getting paid yet, and they can afford to give a guy a fully guaranteed contract. So they just happen to be in that little happy area. Now they got to, you know, and what's great for them, it's only a 3-year contract, really. So if you can afford it to pay somebody, that's the ideal way. So you're not, you know, locked in. If he turns out to not be very good, you know, you're done with him after 3 years. And then I would assume, but in that time frame, they're going to have to start paying some of these other guys. Some of their young talent's going to have to start getting paid. That's where it starts getting difficult. Look at the Ravens situation. You know, they had the big year, Flacco wins, his contract was up, he's highest paid quarterback, and then they were in a situation where they already had higher paid veterans. It's just tough to get back. They just don't have any money. You know, you just gotta.
Well, the big thing becomes is then you have to definitely then land on your picks. And that's the one thing the Ravens haven't done.
Correct.
You know, in the last couple of years. And then all of a sudden, because you don't have a bunch of depth at this point, then now you're basically, you know, you're using free agency kind of like the mid-tier levels of free agency as, like, you know, ways to put talent on your roster, and that's not what you want to do. I mean, I've always thought of free agency as, you know, you want to kind of shop at the top of the market, you know, and get your kind of, you know, those more star players, and then try to get more bargain bin type stuff. You know, I've never – a lot of these, like, mid-tier deals never really work out as well as people want for the most part. It just becomes harder at that point. But you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, that's a GM's job. It's like, you know, people will sometimes complain about, you know, oh, you know, well, this quarterback X makes too much money, you know, they should take a pay cut. Well, you know, it's not the quarterback's job to put a good team around him. It's the GM's job, and the GM is worth anything, you know. He'll be, you know, it's harder, but you still got to do your job. You can't put your hands up in the air and say, well, you know, I just give up. I can't put a good team around it. So at the end of the day, I mean, the Vikings are in an advantageous position and lucky that they had all three of Bradford, Bridgewater, and Keenum coming off the books. And honestly, they're not really paying that much more than they were paying for both Bradford and Bridgewater combined. So at least for this year. So, at the end of the day, I think it's a good move for them.
I do too.
Yeah, the NFC is loaded, I think, with really good quarterbacks. I think, like, one thing that has happened in the league, especially with Alex Smith going to the NFC, is that there's really not that many good quarterbacks in the AFC right now, and there's a lot of good quarterbacks in the NFC, and that's going to be a tough division. I mean, you know, you get Aaron Rodgers back for the Packers. He automatically gives them what seems like a floor of 10-6 every time he's fully healthy. You know, obviously the Lions are a team that always, you know, is around that 8, you know, to 10 win area. And with some of the moves the Bears have made, you know, the past couple of days, they're trying to surround Mitch Trubisky with talent. So, you know, it's definitely, I mean, the whole conference in general, I mean, you can really point to maybe, you know, the Giants, the Bears, and the Cardinals as teams that probably are non-competitive. But outside of that, I mean, you can make a case for every other team that they could make the playoffs this upcoming year.
Yeah, it's true. Football, you know, the way it's set up, free agency, injuries, you know, you can get back in it, and people always have a chance, no doubt about it. It's just funny to see, not funny, but interesting to see. You see the teams that similar to the Vikings. You know, you got your Jaguars, your Titans. 49ers, teams with lots of money, Browns, if they can do things right here, doing a lot of things. Let's see if things work out. You can see they're doing all the signings. You see Jaguars, Titans, 49ers, Jaguars, you know, making it as far as they did. You know, teams are excited to go there now, you must be excited, except, you know, and not a bad thing to re-sign your quarterback. Maybe he fits into what they're doing. They save a lot of money, you know, to go after some of these other players. I thought it was a great thing. I thought it was a great thing getting that offensive guard from the Panthers. I mean, if I was the Redskins, that's what I would have been. That's the guy I would have wanted. The fortified offensive line.
I mean, the one thing with the Jaguars is they've invested a lot of money in their defensive line and now a lot of money in their offensive line, and they're trying to win in the trenches. I mean, they're, you know, with the money they've spent now this year, they're not going to have a lot moving forward, but then they're just going to have to now focus on, you know, re-signing their own guys after this year, like Ramsey and Ngakoue and Miles Jack and stuff like that. You know, but that's where you want to be as a team. You want to be able to re-sign your own guys. And as it stands right now, I mean, the Jaguars have re-signed 4 guys from their 2014 class, which had only happened once before in franchise history. It tells you, if you draft well, and you know, that's how you become good. I mean, you look at the teams who are good right now. They, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, they drafted well. And the teams that aren't are the teams that haven't. Free agency is always one of those things. You want to spend it on your own players, but with the cap constantly rising these contracts becoming more shorter type deals that teams can get out of quickly, and people are smarter with the contracts they give out and how they can get out of the most deals in 2 or 3 years for the most part. You know, the NFL has become a little more like the NBA, where you see more guys on the market more often, and teams have more flexibility. I mean, you just don't really hear much about many teams being in, like, cap hell. When 10 years ago, you know, half the league was playing with, you know, little to no cap space. I mean, you know, you have teams like the Eagles, who are kind of dealing with some stuff right now. The Cowboys always seem to have almost no cap space, but, you know, and they probably overpay their own players a little bit, but, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to not have a lot of cap space. It usually means that you're paying your own guys. It just depends on, you know, if you're a team like the Cowboys and you feel like, are you getting the $14 million worth out of Dez Bryant? But then you see the money some of these other receivers are getting, and you're like, well, if we cut Dez Bryant and, you know, sign, you know, Sammy Watkins, we're not saving any money, you know? So,
right.
I mean, I think right now, I mean, the wide receiver and cornerback market is just, like, insane. I don't know, like, what that says about the draft class this year at both positions. But, I mean, you're talking about guys who are, you know, at best part-time players at some points in their career getting paid $7, $8, $9 million a year. I mean, you know, you're always going to bank on what you think a player can do for your team. But I think some of the deals that have gone down, especially at receivers, have been they've gotten paid a lot of money. And I understand it's a passing league now, but there's maybe like one or two of those guys I would have wanted to pay outside of everyone who's gotten paid. I mean, did you see what the Ravens gave Ryan Grant?
Let me tell you, Jimmy, me and some of my friends about had to double take out that phone a couple times to see if we were rubbing our eyes to see if that was possible. Now I see why Ozzie Newsome is wrapping it up. It maybe 1 year too late. Terrible.
He got $14 million guaranteed.
I know. I can't believe it. I mean, we never could believe what Gruden never saw in him. He just never seemed to perform up to – I mean, Gruden just seemed to love him. We always wondered why he was still on the team. It was shocking. And Richardson, you know, who the Redskins picked up, I don't feel quite as bad because when I looked at – I think he's better than Pryor, who we had last year. We paid $8 million just for 1 year, though. So it's good to know if you miss on somebody, at least you're done with them after 1 year. Now Richardson, yeah, if you miss on him, you could, that's where you get hurt. And I know he's not, he's probably, but you're always going to pay a little bit more on the free agent market. He's probably more of a $5-6 million a year guy, but you got to pay a little bit to get him. So I don't think
I didn't necessarily mind the Richardson one because I think the Redskins needed speed and, you know, Richardson's coming off his full first, like, actual healthy season in the league. And so you're definitely banking on it a little bit. I just think in general there's just been, like, a lot of deals, especially, you know, for receiver and cornerback where teams have overpaid.
Sammy Watkins. I mean, what's he really done to deserve? Potential-wise, he looks like he's a $16 million a year guy. But he's been in the league. Nobody seems to – I mean, he's getting bounced around. He seems to underperform. You seem like you're always disappointed after you have him. But he does look good in that uniform. And so he's going to get another chance. Robinson, you know, I liked him, but I didn't like him coming off a major, knee surgery. From last year.
I mean,
surprised he got that number.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me just because I think the potential he has. I mean,
I can't remember
somebody who had had his productivity who hit the market as a receiver at, like, age 24 or 25. He signed with basically it was a three-year deal, which is really only two of it guaranteed. So, I don't know. I mean, I think you just don't see that level of caliber of a player – like hit the market a lot of times just because like most of the time he would have been re-signed, but having, you know, the knee injury and the Jaguars basically choosing to, you know, allocate his money to Andrew Norwell instead. I really like Robinson. Robinson is like a clear number one type guy receiver. And the Bears had a bunch of money to spend. So, you know, I know the Redskins were interested in him. And then the Jaguars were interested in bringing him back, but obviously they had a price on whatever they wanted to pay him. So, if you know, like guys like, you know, Ryan Grant are getting like $7 million plus per, I would have no problem with playing Allen Robinson, you know, $13 million, $14 million. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, again, all that really matters in all these contracts is the guaranteed money. Some of this other stuff can be minutia and things like that. I mean, like Richard Sherman's deal was like 3 for $38. He only got like $4 million guaranteed, you know. I mean, that's really what matters in all these kind of things. And I think most front offices are smart enough now where they front load these deals enough to where they can get out of it. So, free agency is really just trying about to help your team right now. It's definitely a crazy period going on right now. I feel like running backs have also gotten paid an extraordinary amount too. I mean, last year, the highest paid running back was Latavius Murray, and he got like $16 million. And now you have like, you know, Jarrett McKinnon and Deion Lewis, and like even the Giants gave like Jonathan Stewart like $6 million guaranteed after the year he had. Like, it's just, I mean, I know like some people feel the running back position is vitalized, but it's like, just draft the guy. I mean, one of the best running backs in the league last year was the 6th round pick, you know, so, and Kareem Hunt. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, these teams that are paying for like nickel guys and slot receivers and running backs, I mean, I feel like those are the positions you just draft and kind of cycle through. And you pay premium for, you know, pass rushers and good offensive linemen and really, really good receivers and really good cornerbacks. That's just how I feel. I know, has the Redskins tried to work anything out with Zach Brown?
From what I heard, they just their number just isn't where he wants it to be. So, in Redskins, you got to pay a little bit, you know. I mean, if a tag linebacker averages $14 million, he's not that. I think he's asking for $10 million. I think he's in the $10 million range. I think he's that good. If he's not $14 million, he's not a tag guy, but I think he is an average. You know, they only paid 2.3 for him last year, so you're going to have to ante up. I mean, he had a big time year. He was the most noticeable player on the field. I just think some guys you just got to pay. Breland, they let go, and they already lost Fuller, so they lost two cornerbacks off a team that needs cornerbacks. So, you know, you're going to have to, you know, they're looking at Cromartie from the Eagles, right? Giants. You know, he came in last night. It sounded like it went pretty good, but to me, he's a step down.
It seems like Breland, even though he was inconsistent, he didn't seem like he got that much. And it's kind of one of those, like, you know, like I said, you want to draft, develop, and re-sign your own guys. Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it didn't seem like Breland got like an overwhelming offer. You never know what it takes. If you give him the same offer the Panthers did, maybe he just wants to go to a new place. The thing is with free agency is we have to realize is all these teams have had negotiating rights with these players for a couple of months, if not, you know, being able to extend them the year before. So I think a lot of the times the big thing is trying to not let these guys hit free agency, because that's when their price just goes through the roof. And when you do an extension, it's a compromise on both sides. It's, you know, the player probably giving up a little bit of money for extra security, and the team, you know, maybe, you know, committing more money maybe sometimes than they'd like, but they at least get to know that they get to keep this certain player, and then you kind of have a happy medium. And then free agency is just where it goes like crazy. And, you know, the thing is, you're right. I mean, right now there's a bunch of teams, you know, the 49ers, the Bears, the Browns, you know, who have a bunch of cap space, who can overpay for guys, and even if it's an overpay, it's really not that bad of a deal, because like, what are they going to spend that money on anyways? You know, they're just trying to make their team better at this point. And a lot of times, you know, the good teams, the teams that don't have a lot of cap space, and they have to let guys walk. It's definitely a really interesting time of year, especially, I guess, kind of with the quarterback carousel a little bit. You know, Keenum going to Denver, Bridgewater going to the Jets. I mean, and then it starts to set up to, okay, who's going to draft a quarterback? Like, to me, as of right now, like, I mean, I know the Browns just signed Carlos Hyde, and so then it's just kind of like, okay, like, there's been talk of them picking Barkley with number one, but they committed decent money to a running back. Does that prelude them from taking Barkley? To me, it seems like they're clearly going to take a quarterback with the first pick. So then you start playing the, okay, like, how does this set up for the draft, especially with, like, the quarterbacks? Because, you know, I mean, that's always going to be the big thing is, you know, who are the teams that are looking to improve at quarterback? And then, you know, a lot of people consider this a really good draft.
Yeah, you know, the quarterback, you know, the only reason I would take first, if you are dead fast on one of the guys, you, you know, if you're not sure, then I would just take the running back, take Barkley, and just take, you know, three picks later, right? You're at four. You just pick maybe one of the other guys that someone else already didn't pick, you know, if you think they're close. Yeah, I think you got to get that running back. I mean, there's some running backs you just got to grab, and he's one of them.
I would never take a running back with the first overall pick.
Barkley? I mean, a sure thing? I mean, what you think is a sure thing?
I mean, the thing is, how much do we know? Like,
is he a sure thing? Like, I mean, there's – I think sure things have become less of a thing in the NFL. I mean, it used to be that, like, if you pick a left tackle in the top 10, it's, like, a sure thing. You look at the history of, like, left tackles picked in the top 10 recently. Like, there haven't been, like, you know – like Blake Robinson was selected number two overall, you know. Luke Jokel was selected number two overall, you know. Eric Flowers was selected number nine overall. I mean, it's just, they used to be like, that's like your sort of thing. But I think with the way college, the way people play in college now at certain positions, I think, you know, at some places they're more NFL ready than they used to be, and some places they're not. I mean, I don't know. I like Tyron
Taylor. Yeah,
he's a decent quarterback. You know, I think he gets more flack than he deserves. I mean, I don't think he was throwing to nobody last year in Buffalo. But I think you got to have pick a quarterback there, because, you know, it's one of those things. Until you have one, you got to keep trying in certain ways. And I don't know. I just think the value of picking a running back, you know, in the top five, there's so many more examples of finding running backs later in the draft than there are finding really good pass rushers, for example. Like, if you look at the history of, like, the best pass rushers in the last 20 years, almost exclusively how they've been drafted in the first round. You know, but running back is scattered pretty much all. It's more of a value thing. Like, if I'm picking someone top five, I'm picking, you know, a quarterback, I'm picking, you know, a pass rusher, I'm picking left tackle, I'm picking, a cornerback or something like that. It's just kind of one of those things where you can find more value later than you can at those other positions. So, I mean, if I were them,
I don't think you're going to find someone better than Barkley at a later position. You can find some value. Yeah. I mean, you can always find good. You can always find some good running back. I agree with you. I would, to me, see, it's just an opinion thing. It's just, where do you place Barkley? Does he look a little more special?
You have to think that Saquon Barkley is. You have to think that Saquon Barkley is, like, generational. Personally, like, I think he's better than Fournette was, but I also like Ezekiel Elliott better, and I like Todd Gurley better. And I think Todd Gurley only fell to 10 because he had the torn ACL. And those guys are successful, but I don't know. It's one of those things where you have to weigh the value of it. We'll see what I don't think the Browns are going to pick him number one. I think it's a lot of smokescreen. I think the Giants could do it, and I think that probably would be a mistake for the Giants, because the Giants are kind of playing this offseason right now as if, oh, we just need to get the band back together, and we can make another run at it. And I have serious doubts that I think, like, Eli has much left in the tank.
Giants need to draft – they need to draft that guard from Notre Dame. They need linemen. They need an offensive lineman. They need someone to protect their quarterback. They need someone to open up some holes. And I hope they don't, you know. They just signed a running back. Now, granted, Stewart's an older, at the end of the road. Surprised that he, like you said, he got a pretty good number for his age. And and then you got to go by, they always talk about, they go by who's the best player on the board. And that's how your team has to decide. If Barkley isn't the best on your board, you don't pick him. You know, you pick your lineman, you pick your, your end, you pick your quarterback. I just hope the Giants don't get Barkley because I don't want to see him going up against us every week. You know, I mean, twice a year, every year. But granted, if they don't have much of blocking, if you don't have much blocking, you need a great running back. I think you can get good running backs. If you have good, if you have really good blocking, a good running back would be fine. I've always believed that, even with a quarterback. I think the better your line is, the better your quarterback is, the better your running backs are. But otherwise, you're going to need a better quarterback or a better running back. And hope for the best. But Redskins got some work to do. I mean, they need cornerbacks, linebackers, safety. They got an okay receiver, but and I don't want to be drafting. You know, Redskins need to draft a lineman. It's got to be either I want the big boy from Washington, Vita Vey, or I want the guy from Alabama. What's his Paul Allen? I want a defensive lineman, or I want a really good safety, or I want a linebacker. It's got to be right there, right down the middle on defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing with the Redskins is, you know, the whole point of not paying Cousins was, well, we need to address another needs on our roster. Well, you know, they paid Alex Smith a significant change, and they're not paying him, you know, that much less than what Cousins got. And so you maybe you're working with an extra $5 or $6 million, but yeah, I mean, they still that's the whole point of, you know, and that's why some people, you know, with Fuller, with the Smith trade, we're not kind of happy about that instead of including in because, you know, good, cheap, young player, and then you let Freeland walk. I mean, and then you're paying Norman a bunch of money on one side, and he's been good, but, you know, you just don't have a lot of depth at the position. You know, if they let a guy like that Brown walk, you know, somebody who seem to thrive in their system, that seems like another – I don't know. To me, it seems like the Redskins kind of have kind of erased some of the good that McLuhan kind of brought to the organization. And now that they have Bruce Allen back in charge, and, you know, it just seems like – I don't want to say they're doing things like they used to do, but they just – it just seems like – they've left themselves with a lot of holes and not a lot of ways to fill those holes.
Yeah, I mean, they try to go at – you kind of touched on it, not really in the Redskins situation, but, like, how do you use the free agency? Yeah, you try to, you know, pluck a star, one or two at the top, and then maybe fill in some – at the bottom, Redskins tend to go in the middle. In the middle, you know, those players, there's a reason why they're in the middle. I mean, they'll make some good plays here and there, but you don't get that consistency week after week, and so your team's just not as good. And they seem like from the days when they paid the old aging superstar way too much money, if you're going to lose Fuller, you got to pay Breland. You just can't lose two starting cornerbacks that are good on a team that only had three. You know, I mean, you sign Quentin Dunbar. Well, he's a reserve. He's a piece. He's that low dollar guy. You need a star. You need at least three really good cornerbacks, at least. And so now, you know, they got some work to do. That's all. They got some work to do. There's still some cornerbacks out there. Let's see what they do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A lot is going to be talked about the deals that get finalized today. But, I mean, some of the better deals in free agency will come in the next, you know, following week or so, you know, when the market, you know, when teams aren't spending as much money and you can find guys for cheap prices. I mean, I think a guy like, you know, even if he's maybe a little bit of a downgrade, a guy like Dominic Rogers from Artie, you know, who – is probably, you know, he already has made some money because he just got cut. So, you know, he'll probably be someone who you can get for decently cheap, probably get him on a one-year deal, you know. And you kind of have to find those value things. But I think with the Redskins, you're right. I mean, with Breland and even though they didn't draft and develop him, Zach Brown are two examples of guys that you should be signing and keeping as part of a core of your defense. Especially when you don't have, you know, a bunch of talented guys on defense. You know, I mean, Kerrigan is a really good player. Guy they got from Alabama last year, even though he got injured, you know, showed really good flashes. Josh Norman,
Are you talking about, well, they got two Alabama, they got the linebacker Anderson, who really had a disappointing season, but they say you're talking about the lineman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, he was decent until he got hurt. And
no,
he was
good.
He was solid. You saw. Yeah, I think they're going to get a lot about it. Jimmy, I was just going to say the Anderson, the linebacker, hearing a lot of good stuff about him in the offseason, what he learned, you know, changing his body around. I think he's going to be super motivated. He's going to be improved. But they got to decide on like Murphy, the linebacker. Troy Murphy. So I mean, you know,
Murphy,
they got teams
sure.
that are Trent Murphy. You know, he's hurt all last year, but he had to start the season. He was, you know, four games on. He was suspended for using PEDs. Was that why he had a good year the year before? Because he was on PEDs, or was it because the Redskins had him fluctuating between linebacker and lineman, and his weight? You know, he had to keep, you know, going, you know, when he was playing on the line, he had to put on 30, 40 pounds to lose it, to go back to linebacker. You know, he probably, maybe he had to be on some kind of, maybe he got on the PEDs when he had to put on the strength. I don't know. But was that the reason why he had his best year? And then, so what do you pay him this year? You know, San Francisco, they got all, you know, some of these teams got tons of money. I don't know. I'm not going to overpay to keep him. I liked him. He just wasn't a special player. He was a good player, made some nice plays. But you can see Brown is a special player. Zach Brown's a special player. I think you got to pay him. Now, also, the Redskins have to walk a fine line because, you know, they can get a third-round pick for Cousins as long as they don't overspend in free agency. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, that's when
you want to get
when guys. So, like guys who are cut by other teams, like I mean, like I know I keep bringing it, but like a Rogers Cromartie don't count against that formula to get the comp pick, you know.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Yeah, you know. So if that the Ravens have been notorious that for years, because the Ravens have received like the most comp picks in like the last 20 years. They tend to sign a lot of guys who are cut by other teams, Mike Wallace, Jeremy Maclin, you know. I mean, just examples of that a lot of the time. You just have to.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah. So guys who are like true free agents count against it, but guys who are cut by other teams don't. So, but basically, the Redskins are going to have to try pretty hard to spending on other people's players to. But that's also another reason why you signed Breland and Brown, because if you sign both of them, those guys don't count against that formula, you know? So it's when you sign other people's free agents. So, I mean, we'll see what they do.
Yeah, that's good. Another good point there, too.
Yeah, they basically essentially want guys to keep their own players in the NFL. That's what they try to incentivize teams to do. All right, so I think that's mostly all on the NFL. I want to just go quickly into the NBA.
Sure.
It is toward like the end of the season, but in both conferences, I mean, you know, outside of the top, you know, two in both of them, there's a lot of tight races going on for seeding.
Yep.
And seeding that I actually think is going to really matter in these situations. I mean, right now in the West, I mean, it's crazy, but San Antonio is technically out of the playoff picture.
As it stands
right now, which is insane if you think about it. I mean, they've had 22 consecutive 50-win seasons and making the playoffs. I mean, it's just completely unprecedented. I mean, right now, through 3 through 10 in the West is separated by 4.5 games, Portland having the third seed there. And then in the East, you have Indiana who just claimed the third seed. But, you know, right now between Miami and Indiana, there's only 4 games. So between the 3 and the 8. So, I mean, it's interesting because, like, let's say if you're Toronto or Boston, like, I would almost rather play like a Miami or an Indiana than I'd rather play like a Milwaukee or a Philadelphia in the first round, just because of the star talent alone. I mean, right now, you know, the Cavs would be playing the Wizards if the season ended today. I guarantee you the Wizards would rather play a team like the Pacers or the Bucks. I know they're never scared of the Cavs, and they talk like they can beat them. Right. They probably don't want to play LeBron. I mean, it's just there's a lot of seeding going on that actually matters right now in both conferences. You got teams like, you know, Minnesota who are like right now with a little bit of the slippage they've had since Jimmy Butler's been out. You know, they may not make the playoffs. I mean, and Utah is surging right now ever since they got Rudy Gobert back. It's just kind of crazy right now outside of basically Houston, Golden State. And Houston, you know, right now is on track to get the one seed because not only are they two games ahead of Golden State, but they have the tiebreaker versus them too, which, I mean, I think that could actually matter, you know, having a home court advantage against the Warriors. So I don't know. There's just a lot going on right now, just for basically seeding position.
No, definitely. Houston, I think they need all the help they can get. So if they can get that extra game in the home court, any edge they can get to win, that would be big. It's worked out better there than I thought it would at the beginning of the year with Chris Paul. And then, able to add those players. Wizards just couldn't add no players. You know, Grunfeld just did a terrible job. Picked up Sessions, and then Sessions didn't even play the first 10 days. And then it looks like he's trying to find his way, with the team now. Just didn't do enough. Didn't really help the team at all for the stretch. They blew another game last night. It's probably about the 10th game this year they've blown in the fourth quarter where they've had a lead. And just can't close the deal. Mistakes, missed shots, missed free throws, turnovers at the wrong time. It's too bad. They look good for most of the night, and then boom, they just have a bad 5-minute spell. And neither team was really playing great defensively last night. Memphis, being a Thibodeau team, shocked. Granted, they're missing their most tenacious player in Butler. But the rest of the guys, man, they got to learn how to play some defense. My Lord, Wizards pretty much could do almost anything they wanted. It makes it exciting. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's the thing about Minnesota is, I mean, Butler is not only their best player, but really outside of Taj Gibson, I mean, if you look at the guys on that team, it does not scream out good defensive guys. I mean, Towns is incredibly gifted offensively at this point in his career, but defensively he really still hasn't gotten it. Wiggins is the same way. I mean, Wiggins is the type of perfect example of a guy who looks like he could be a really, really good defender, but just doesn't really have that feel on that end of the court. And even if he has, like, the quote-unquote physical tools, he's never going to – he just doesn't have, that sense on that end of the court. Then Teague, obviously, has never really been a great defender. They had really good team defense in Atlanta. And then you have guys like, Crawford and Bielitsa and, just in general, guys just weren't great defenders. So, I mean, it's a Tom Thibodeau team, but, I mean, they really truly only have – I mean, bringing Butler and Gibson – into their team this past year was really about, they had a bottom five defense last year. It hasn't been as bad this year, but bringing those two guys in were just as much about, bringing in guys that Thibodeau likes as much as guys that can actually play defense, and I think they're going to reach a certain level. They're going to reach the next level when a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns does get better on the defensive end, because he just seems to get lost as well there too. I don't know. And in the West too, I mean, it's one of those things where, with San Antonio and not having Kawhi at this point, probably not getting him back. I mean, I know there's mixed reports about when he'll come back and if he'll come back. It just goes to show you too. I mean, you know, Greg Popovich is a really good coach, but, I mean, you can only, you know, play without your best player for so long. I mean, that was the one thing with having Tim Duncan is Duncan was as durable as ever for the most part, and so we never got to really see what, you know, he rested Duncan toward the end of his career, but we never got to see what that team looked like just truly without their best player. And it just goes to show you that, you know, Greg Popovich, you know, best coach in the league, you know, he can only do so much to save his team.
Yeah, I mean, and then they didn't really do anything to improve the team, try to bring anybody in to kind of help. So maybe they're just realizing, you know, they need more pieces, and maybe it's time to start, I'm not going to say tanking, but, you know, maybe realizing, you know, to get a, you know, to draft some better players, we might need a better positioning. I don't know.
It is
watch
also
them.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What is? No. Well, you watch them. They I watch them. You still see the team ball. Hey, what they get is because they play unselfish. But when you watch them, they don't have a whole lot of talent. I mean, not fun to watch.
Thing is they don't have a lot of young talent either. I mean, they just, you know, Kawhi was kind of like that boost for them of, like, young talent they needed to win another championship and compete. But now, I mean, it's just, you know, and they had injuries too. I mean, guys like Patty Mills and Rudy Gay haven't been healthy the whole time. But,
right,
a young guy like DeJounte Murray, it's just, you know, he starts for them, but he's just not – he's probably one of the lower-end starting point guards in the league. And, you know, and then they also – you know, they just, they're not that athletic either. You know, they play, you know, Gasol and Jaffrey LaVerne and Aldridge. You know, and Aldridge is a really good player, but he's not really necessarily a great athlete. And so they're not getting those, like, easy buckets by running in transition. And so, it feels like their team is a little behind the times with how they are. But, I mean, again, they're so well coached that, you know, sometimes it doesn't seem like it. But, I mean, you know, I mean, with Kawhi, they'd easily probably be the third best team in the West, which isn't saying that much this year, considering how it's all stacked out. I think the run has been interesting. I mean, OKC, you know, still looks really inconsistent. I mean, when Robertson went out, even though Robertson is just, you know, a very limited player on the offensive end, you know, their defense has gone from a top five defense, you know, when he was playing with them, to being, you know, in the bottom, you know, 10 of the league since he got hurt. I think it just puts a lot more stress on Paul George and Carmelo Anthony on the defensive end to guard the other team's best players at this point.
Watching Anthony Davis
the last month or so has been pretty incredible. I mean, you know, I think DeMarcus Cousins is a really good player, but you can make the case that they've played better without him, at least for this stretch.
Oh, yeah.
It
doesn't surprise me. I mean, I've never been a Cousins fan. More of a cancer than he is. I mean, he's talented, but that's not all it takes. They would have been better off trying to trade him to get some talent back or a pick to keep improving their team. But because they really are, he's just not, he just don't do much for me. That's what I would have done. I was the guy, if you remember, I was the guy that thought the only possible move for the Wizards was to get like a guy like Boogie Cousins. That's the only thing I could see that would help them improve. Because otherwise, I just think they're sort of stuck. They got all this money put into three guys. And they got some other good talent. You see, Morris is really playing well lately, shooting the ball tremendously. But you know, the center position with Gortat, Mahimi, who's played better. I mean, he's moving better. But the game has just passed him by. It's just a lot of nights he's just too big and too slow, and can't cover anybody up behind the 3-point line. So he doesn't even really need to play. Those are the games they either have to go small with Morris at the five, or play Jason Smith more, but that doesn't happen. He still just keeps playing that rotation with Mahimi, And, you know, he's trying to cover Carl Anthony Towns, but he's 5 feet behind the three-point line. Mahimi, it's just difficult. It's just, you know, it's just –
I think you can simultaneously think that Cousins can be a cancer at some points and also think that the Wizards should have tried to trade for him, because you're right. I mean, they're going to run into a situation these next couple of years where it feels like they're stuck. I mean, look, they have a pretty good top three. I think a lot of teams would be happy with Wall, Beal, and Porter if they could go grab that today, especially with Beal and Porter just because of their age. I mean, John Wall's contract looks a little, you know, going forward, but, I mean, that's the price you pay, you know, to keep a superstar. I mean, there's going to be other guys who get deals like that as this designated player extension becomes more of a thing. So they are going to be a little bit stuck. So they're going to have to be creative in that sort of aspect, especially because, you know, they've made some mistakes investing, you know, not so wisely.
They're the organization that's going to not go over the salary cap to pay the penalty, the luxury tax penalty. So that's a reason why they're stuck. You can't commit all this money to three guys, especially three smaller guys, and not be willing to go over the cap. You should have been smarter. You should have had to let Porter go, or you should have traded him earlier, because you had his replacement in New Bray. To save money,
What Oubre gets, because he's going to be extension eligible this next year. It'll definitely be interesting to see what he gets, because I think Oubre is a guy who would be a valued commodity in the league.
Oh my God, yes, he plays the whole game. His game is just growing. Not only is he, you know, he's still a defensive presence. He's with them long arms and his quick feet and his tenaciousness, but also he's learned how to put the ball on the floor. He's taken it to the hole more. Lefties are tough, and he's hitting his threes. His three-pointer is skyrocketing. So, yeah, that's one guy. Thank God that's a guy everybody wanted in a trade. You wanted Boogie Cousins? Well, you got to give up Oubre and a first-round pick. Oubre. Nobody was going to take Porter because it's too much money. And then the problem with Porter's playing really well now because Wall hasn't been there. When Wall comes back, he takes so many shots that it takes Porter, who's a much better shooter than Wall, he doesn't get the volume of shots that he should be getting. Because generally, Wall gets some good looks only because he's got a good handle. And teams would rather have him shoot than Porter. So he will get more shots, and that takes away from Porter. So Porter's not as effective. And they're just in a bad place.
Who, if you had to, if someone put a gun to your head today, who would you take to come out of the East?
Oh, out of the East right now? Oh, Toronto. I'd have to say Toronto. I mean, they're healthy. Their bench is strong. The starters have revamped their games a little bit and share the ball a little bit more. And DeRozan is popping threes at a better clip than he ever has. Yeah, I mean, you look at it with all the injuries the Celtics have just taken on. The Wizards got them tonight, and Smart's out. Kyrie Irving's out. The other guard, the big guard, he's out. The athletic guy, what's his name?
Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown's out. So the big Horford is sick, so he might not play. So catching them at a good time. But when they're full healthy, I like the Celtics, but they're obviously not. And Toronto is, and they're playing well. And Cleveland's playing, maybe when Love gets back, it just looks ugly there again. It started to look promising with the trades, and then all of a sudden I watched Clarkson the other night. Oh, my God, he shot like three air balls. I mean, he was clanking them.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to do too much. You know, he was trying to be Kyrie Irving, and he's not. But
Clark is the ultimate example of a guy who, if you watch him on a certain night, you would say, this guy is really good. You know, like, this guy's like, why isn't he a starter in the league? Like, you know, he's really good. And then you watch him for like 20 games and you realize that, you know, he has, you know, these really good spurts. But I also think with the Cavs, you know, I want to wait to see what happens when they get Love back, when they get Thompson back. I mean, right now, I like Larry Nance Jr., but, like, them playing him at center, like, 36 minutes a game, I mean, when they had to go play the Lakers and the Clippers, who both have big guys, I mean, they just abused Larry Nance. I mean, you know, Tristan Thompson is not, you know, the best he's been in his career, but at least the dude can get some rebounds and body people a little bit. You know, Nance is just a little bit of a smaller guy. And so, you know, when they played the Lakers and they played the Clippers, they just got completely out-rebounded and out-toughed out by guys like Lopez and Julius Randle and stuff like that. I mean, I just wanted to touch on the Lakers real quick. I know, you know, they've kind of been on a surge. You know, it's funny, everybody keeps talking about, you know, how all this Lakers team, you know, how like they're showing out for, you know, like that they could be, you know, a destination for Paul George or LeBron James or whoever. And I think they played really well, and Luke Walton's done a really good job, but when you consider the fact that three of the guys on their team right now may not be parts of those teams if they sign two match free agents, so it would be, you know, Julius Randle, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Brook Lopez, who have all played really well for them lately, they'd have to let all those guys go in order to sign two max guys. So it is nice that they've played well, but, you know, part of the reason they've played well has been actually more veteran guys. And so, you know, while it's nice that it's kind of like at this point, like, you know, they've always said, oh, you know, we'll just let Julius Randle go if we have to. But, I mean, the dude's played really, really well. It's almost like, you know, this is a guy you should be looking to keep. You know, I understand you want to go big fish hunting, but, you know, it's one of those things where they've built up a good young core, and I feel like they should be, you know, looking to replenish that. And even Isaiah Thomas has played well for them too. So, you know, we'll see what they do. But I think part of the reason they're winning is because of guys like Lopez and Randle and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope have all played really well. And that also helps, you know, like that also helps, you know, with guys like Lonzo and Brandon Ingram and Kuzma. But, you know, Brandon Ingram hasn't even played the last couple of games. So, he's hurt.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Lakers has absolutely no reason to tank because they don't even have their pick. You know, so I mean, that's the other thing I was going to say. It's amazing watching the tank race right now. The Grizzlies have lost like 23 straight games. I mean, like. I mean, just watch who some of these teams are playing. I mean, the Bulls basically got penalized for the league for just sitting out Lopez and Justin Holiday. You know, I mean, we're not talking about, like, you know, oh, they're sitting out Eric Bledsoe or something like the Suns did last year, you know, who's actually a really good player. Like, you know, the league is like, you can't sit out Robin Lopez. This is what the fans come to see, you know.
Robin Lopez?
I mean, it's just amazing. They penalized the Bulls for sitting them out. So
I don't think anybody's coming to watch Robin. Now, he's a solid player, but nobody's saying, hey, son, we're going to watch Robin. Daddy's got tickets. We're going to go watch Lopez play tonight. That ain't happening.
Yeah. But I do think people do come to see a competitive game. And, I mean, somebody like, you know, the Suns, like, I basically just sat out all their veterans. They're playing, like, basically G League guys at some positions. It is amazing to watch the race for the number one pick, especially before next year when they implement the new lottery rules.
Yeah, is that true on Memphis? Have they lost 23 games in a row?
Yep.
Oh, my God, I haven't even heard that much talk about it. I mean, I've heard about the tanking part, but I didn't realize, you know, I haven't heard anybody really going on about it, losing.
I'm sorry, they've only lost 20 in a row, my bad. Whatever, 20 in a row,
23. Oh, my. Yeah, that's pretty, well, you know, when you put all your money into you know, point guard that gets hurt. I mean, this is what, his second or third time he's missed tons of time. He's a talented guy, but you make him the highest paid player ever. And then he gets hurt, and then he don't, you know, and then of course the Parsons thing has just crushed him. And again, I gotta assume it's an organization that doesn't want to go over the salary cap. And I can't imagine, you know, if the Wizards ain't, I can't believe they would be going over.
That was one of the big things with Tyreek, is they basically said, you know, we're, one of the reasons they didn't want to trade him is they didn't want to take back any money for next year. Definitely not an organization that wants to, especially if they're not going to be good. So, and their pick is also owed, you know, the Celtics have another gift. Their pick next year is owed to the Celtics. So, the Celtics just
Memphis?
Keep on, yeah.
Keep on getting, God damn.
You want to know what that pick is from, Dave?
What is that?
They, like 4 years ago, they traded that pick, like a 2019 pick for Jeff Green.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Jeff Green. You talk about an underachiever. That guy looks so good. His height, his length. I mean, he's just so athletic looking, and he is. But man, he just disappoints when he's on your team. You just like. But he keeps getting chances. That's for sure.
I mean, he's probably had his best season in a while playing for the Cavs this year. But yeah,
well,
he's the classic example of a guy who, again, looks like he should be really good, but he's never really made any team. I mean, he's been traded for a first round pick three times. The Celtics traded a first round pick for him. The Grizzlies traded a first round pick for him, and the Clippers traded a first round pick for him.
No, you just keep thinking. I mean, everybody just thinks, you know, he's finally going to click, or it's, I mean, something's just missing there. Not surprising that he's had his best year with LeBron. LeBron will tend to make people look better. Hits him at the, you know, gets him the ball in great positions, and he takes, you know, he takes a lot of the people towards him and leaves you open. So yeah, you should have your better years with LeBron for sure. But yeah, the guys is. But yeah, how about them Celtics, huh? Man, that's. I didn't even realize that. That's gonna be.
And then if they don't get the Lakers pick this year, they have the Kings pick next year.
Wow.
Wow.
And all that young talent.
Yeah,
and and you got Hayward coming back next year. Oh my, it's. But you can see what happens, man. You get a few injuries. You know, Kyrie's had a history of some injuries here and there, and looks like they're starting to creep in on him again. His knee's starting to bother him, so not good.
Yeah,
not good there.
I definitely think after this year, the Celtics have in the East. At least for next season, the best pass to the finals possible. You know, assuming a team like the Sixers doesn't land a big free agent. But I mean, they possibly could. I mean, so would you take? I guess Fultz came in. Would you take the Sixers young guys over the Celtics young guys?
You know what? I just don't trust Embiid. You know, being able to stay healthy. So I would have to, I just think you got one of the best coaches. I know you didn't mention coach, but I think Brad Stevens is, you know, just runs circles around the guy, in Cleveland. Philadelphia, but the guy has a tremendous amounts of talent. But, man, they need him out there, you know, 35 minutes a night, every night, not just every other game. He's got to be able to do it for a whole year. And then we can start talking, you know, some greatness here. I think they've thrown it on him because you can see he's got tons of talent, but incredible personality. And Simmons just has to learn how to shoot. I mean, I don't know if he can. I mean, just some guys can't shoot. But he's got everything else. I mean, he's got the size, he's got the length, he's got the handle, he's got the vision. But he's got to learn how to shoot. That's the problem with the guy from and it's a guy from Milwaukee, Giannis. He can't shoot, and you can see it cost him games. It cost people. You know, when people when a guy backs off you 5 feet from the 3-point line because he said I'd rather have you shoot than drive because I can't stop you on the drive.
And that's the one thing is Simmons gets compared to LeBron a lot as far as his skill set. But LeBron was never as bad of a shooter as Ben Simmons is. I mean, he wasn't a good shooter when he came into the league. But he
never
could hit
that
a mid-range jumper, you know. Same thing with a guy like you know, Kobe, too. Like, I mean, it took him a little bit, took Kobe a bit of time to become a decent three-point shooter. But the dude could hit a jump shot. I mean, Giannis, it's one of those things where he still scores so efficiently as of right now. He's still a very good offensive player, but if the Bucks want to become a championship contender, again, he just needs at least a decent mid-range game at best. It doesn't help that the Bucks just don't have like a ton of shooting on their team. I mean, a guy like Eric Bledsoe is a really good player, but maybe his fit with Giannis is a little shaky considering he's not a great shooter either. And then you're playing a guy like John Henson who can't really shoot either, so you're limiting yourself. And it'll help when they get a guy like Malcolm Brogdon back who can shoot and stuff like that. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the three teams in the East that are going to be the head of it, you know, in the future or, you know, close to the future are going to be the Celtics, the Sixers, and the Bucks. And it'll also depend on who they can surround, you know, their quote-unquote stars with. And then obviously the Celtics have maximized that a lot. So we'll see. I mean, you know, the Sixers have 2 draft picks this year. So they can either, you know, add some more young talent or, you know, maybe trade for a veteran. I mean, you know, I've always thought like, you know, I know he wasn't traded at the deadline, but a guy like Kemba Walker would be a really good fit for them. I think they need another scorer. They need another guy because really the Sixers' big problem right now is late in game. It's just give it to Joel Embiid and pray. They just don't have a lot of guys who can score off the dribble. And that's what Markelle Fultz was supposed to be.
Yeah, I have a good friend that plays basketball at DeMatha. So, and he talks. He was just texting the other night that they just don't know what's wrong with Fultz. They say right now he can't. They've got him so screwed up there in Philly with his shooting stroke. They say he just can't shoot right now. He's just, his head. They played with his stroke to trying to change it, and then it's just kind of messed him up. He's got too many thoughts in his head or something. So I don't know. But
a rookie sitting a Phillies Sixers draft pick sitting out his rookie year hasn't been a big deal for them anyway. But I guess you have to ask the question then, you know, what is Fultz's value around the league if you want to trade him? Because I think they probably still believe in him. I mean, they drafted him number one overall. I mean, they traded up to do so. So they obviously have faith in him. The question is more just how much faith do they actually have?
Right. Yeah, I mean, he was more of a scorer, right? Not a point guard, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably more in the scoring vein. I compare him more to a Damian Lillard than I would him to a Lonzo Ball.
Wow.
I'm not talking about the player Damian Lillard is. I'm saying he's the he's not Rudy Rudy.
He could shoot.
Lillard is playing out of his mind.
Crazy.
That's a team that seems like the Blazers are a team that seems like they're they're a team that seems like they're really another one. If they got somebody else to play with him and McCollum, and I know Nurkic is decent and Zach Collins, their draft pick, has looked okay, but they're a team that I thought was maybe someone who should have made a run at Paul George, you know, trading for him last year. They're kind of capped out at the moment. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe the Blazers seem like a team that could make the next big move for like an unhappy superstar. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, not a lot of teams are going to have cap space this summer, so it'll be interesting to see, like, you know, where people actually choose to go. But they're playing really well right now, and Damian Lillard is playing like, you know, like a top 10, top 15 player in the NBA right now.
Oh, definitely. Incredible player. Great player. Love to watch him play. Fun to watch. Great handle, incredible range, tough guy. Yeah. McCollum's a good feeder off of him. Nice piece there. They seem like they're just missing that, like you said, they're just missing that piece. Almost like a new Brett or Porter.
Yeah, they need a three because Evan Turner doesn't quite cut it for me, or Mo Harkless. You know, that's the other thing is that the Blazers were another one of those teams that's a bunch of money in 2016 free agency, and it's all you got to do around the league is look around and see who spent money that year and what teams are screwed. The Wizards, you know, they definitely bit the bullet with Jan Mahinia, but. At least they didn't sign two of those big contracts like some of these other teams did. I mean, you know, Jan Mahinia is not great, but it's looking a lot better than, you know, Joakim Noah and Courtney Lee.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that.
Or Luol Deng.
Still ain't helping.
Timothy Mozgov.
okay.
Myers Leonard and Evan Turner making $27 million combined. They can't even play Myers Leonard anymore. Yeah, there's definitely some bad deals. I mean, but yeah, I mean, you literally the teams that set themselves up well were teams that didn't spend a bunch of money in 2016, or you're the Warriors and you spent your money on Kevin Durant.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, they were throwing it out. They should have been a little bit smarter. Some of those teams, don't spend every dollar. Yeah, and it's now that they're in a tough position. Hey, we got time to touch on baseball, or?
Yeah, I got a couple of minutes. So I guess some recent ones that have happened. I mean, Jake Arrieta signs with the Phillies.
Yeah.
He
exactly.
3 years, $75
exactly.
million.
I
think it's a good
yeah.
deal for the Phillies who need pitching
I
and
do
they don't
too.
Have to give them a huge deal.
Right.
And the Phillies have pretty good young position players. And they also, for both deals, both Carlos Santana and Jake Arrieta, they front-loaded the deal. So they're making more in the first year. So Arrieta's making $30 million in the first year, and then in the last year making $20 million. So they'll have more money to spend later on. I read something the other day that basically said that, you know, somebody in the league, a couple people in the league basically said, like, they'd bet a significant amount of money that the Phillies end up with one of either Harper or Machado just because they have so much money to spend. The Phillies had the lowest payroll in the league last year, and this is a team that at one point has, like, been in the luxury tax in baseball. So,
it's a process. It's a process. You got to be bad for a while, you know, and their fans weren't showing up, and which is fine. You just can't claim you're great fans because you got to show up when they're bad too, and not just when they're good. You know? But always got to get my jabs in when I can. It's my rivals.
It's funny because there was a point when the Phillies were really good, and I think the Nationals had some sort of ticket rule where, like, you know, Nationals Phillies games, they would first sell them to, like, the people in Maryland and Virginia first. Before, like, people in other states could get them. And then, and that was the point where the Phillies were selling out every single game. They had, like, a 3-year sellout streak. And then everything changed. And because they're sitting there like, you know, we would support our team. Even if we were really bad, we'd still sell out every game, da da da. And that's just, unless you're, you know, even the Yankees don't sell out every game. You know, I mean, it's just,
right, exactly.
It's just one of those things
exactly.
where, unless you're really good, I mean, people aren't going to pay a bunch of money to go see a team that sucks. I mean, that's why the Orioles are doing this whole thing where kids under 9 get in free admission.
Right.
For
Good move.
You know, which I think is a smart idea if you want to fill seats.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not going to go out and you get players, then try another approach. Let them in free under nine. You know, there's two ways to look at it, and I guess that's the way they decide to go. It's a shame because they do have good fans. They have a great ballpark. And they're really not that way, but they just not creative enough. And really, the weakness is their biggest weakness is just drafting. You know, I mean, if you're not going to spend money, you got to be a good draft team, and they don't spend
any of their international money. I mean, if you look at where the Nationals have gotten some of their best prospects, like Robles and Soto, it's been on the international market, and they always sell off all of their international money. They did it again this year too, you know.
That's a big mistake. Big mistake. There's talent to be made there, and it's not that huge of investment. It's not like investing $200 million into.
What did the the Nationals got, Soto for like $150,000? You know, I mean, like, yeah, you know, you can. You have to trust your farm system too, and the people developing them. And I think that's been a problem.
Right.
I mean, when's the last time they developed a really good pitcher? They seem to do pretty well with position players, but then they like overpay their own guys too. They seem to value paying Trumbo and Davis. I mean, you take those guys off the books, they would have had some money to spend on starting pitching. So it's going to be funny. They're going to be paying Trumbo and Davis like a combined over $30 million next year, and then they're not going to have Machado, So it's been poor investing, and also just in general, just not the ability to develop guys.
Well, I just saw a note come up on my phone. The Yankees release Adam Lynn. He is available again.
It's just incredible.
Just can't believe
to me that. I mean, the dude.
That guy rakes.
Oh, he's so good against right-handed pitching. I mean, it's crazy to me that nobody seems to want him. I mean,
I know.
I know the Nats have Matt Adams, so they're not going to go after him. But it's just it's just crazy to me he doesn't have a market.
Oh, I'm with you. I just don't get it. I know, first baseman.
The Padres could have signed him for 20 times less than they gave it to Eric Hosmer. You know.
The Twins. I mean, the Twins, and I think they got a decent deal with Morrison, right?
I think the Twins had a really good offseason. I mean,
I do too. I think things have worked in their favor.
That much money.
Well, that's what I mean. The teams have worked. It's worked in their favor with. That's why I just don't know why the Nats couldn't have gotten Lynn at $12 million. That's a guy I've been wanting since the trade deadline last year. I think they really need to get Alex Cobb. They just don't have a lot of good. They don't have a lot. Fed and AJ Cole just don't. Ain't doing it for me. And Tommy Malone.
Their thing is
and,
depth.
If
somebody gets
right.
injured, which somebody will during the year.
I
probably wanted Lynn more than Cobb, but I could definitely say. But I mean, so far as I've seen with conversations with Rizzo, he seems pretty confident in AJ Cole, for better or for worse. That seems to just be his mindset at the moment. I do have to get going. It was nice doing this as always, and we should try to do this next week.
All right, sounds good, Jimmy. Take care, buddy.
All right. You too.